Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. Albert and I are chipper on this Friday morning after the first round of the NFL draft. Yes, full of energy, big coffees all around. We're going to, at some point, this show is going to build to the culmination of one of my favorite pod moments of the year, which is the revelation of the MMQB mock draft scorecard. Spent all morning doing math, which is always a very dangerous thing. I had to get up in early to water the grass, and because we just planted seeds. So I had to build in the extra math time. And I made sure I did that for the podcast today because I wanted all
of you
to know. By
the way, I do not know the results, just so we're clear.
Nobody knows. So yeah. It's between me, Albert, and Matt Verderam. Winner gets a steak dinner from editor John Plume. However, if it's me, I get two because I tend to eat a little bit more than everybody else. So
you wouldn't be able to tell looking at you. Like, like seriously. I mean... Connor's way more svelte than he was when he and I first started working together, I'd say. So I see him, like, he'll send these pictures of these double dinners he has, which I'm jealous because, you know, I have a candy bar and I can feel my hips jiggle, you know? So I have to be very, I have to be very judicious about what I eat. And then, you know, I see Connor who, you know, like, looks like he's done really well, like in the weight loss game over the last 7 or 8 years, and somehow he's like, you know, he's got like an order of General Gao's and then like a burrito from the Mexican place, and he's eating the whole thing, you know. And I don't know how you make this work, Connor. I'm impressed. I wish I could do that.
I'm gonna let it slip that you called it General Gao. By the way, please tell
General
me that's
so's like, well, there's different names for it. Oh, that's the weird thing. It's like, is it actually one general or were there several generals?
It's General Sal, isn't it?
But I've heard there's General Gao's also. I've heard other people call it General Gao's, but there's General Sal's.
Wait, there's a General Gao's?
Yes. You've never seen that before? Yes.
No.
Yeah.
I've always something wondered that's only available in Boston.
Is it different pronunciations of the same name that got lost in translation, or are there multiple generals who had chicken named after them? I'm not sure.
Is General Gao and General Cao, do they taste like, have you ordered the both of them?
They're the exact same, yeah.
Are the exact same thing? Okay. Yeah. All right. Producer Shelby here has pulled up Quora. Are General Gao and General Cao the same person?
See, I told you, General Gao, there you go.
Okay, yes. Yes, same guy, according to David Lindbergh, engineer and author, with 1.4K answers on Quora.
He's a big Quora guy.
So he's a big Quora guy.
Lindbergh.
Dave Lindbergh. He says, yes, same guy, Zhao Zongtang. The name gets mixed up because of A, different systems of translating Chinese into English, B, different Chinese dialects, and C, people obviously, like us, being sloppy with spelling and in an unfamiliar language. Then once it gets messed up, other restaurants copy it because once diners are used to the name, they experience it in other places. So there you go. Oh, and he adds, by the way, that General Zhao Zongtang was not a chicken. His military was quite successful. So there you go. Lots to digest here this morning. Unfortunately, not any General Gao, but
that is a perfect start to the morning after the draft.
I had sushi last night.
This is what we're learning about General Gao.
General Gao,
not the chicken, the actual person.
I would say the only thing more confusing than that is the Falcons taking Michael Penix. So let's start there. Listen, we'll get to. The first two or three picks, let's do it this way. If there's anything in the first two or three picks you want to talk about, for me, what stood out, the Bears, I'll just give one-liners on. To me, the Commanders taking Jaden was the biggest slam dunk of the draft. I'm going to leave that alone. The 1 and 3 stuck out to me. For one, I think that the Bears are smart because, unlike every other team that has drafted a quote-unquote generational quarterback, and I'm talking about Andrew Luck, Bryce Young, who else would you put in that category? Trevor Lawrence.
Joe Burrow, I guess, but I think that was sort of a late one.
He didn't come on until later, right?
He didn't come on until late, yeah. Yeah. I would say Lawrence and Luck are probably the two most applicable names.
Yeah, and unlike those teams, like the Bears had that extra year of runway where they were able to get a tackle in place. They were able to get wide receivers in place. They were able to get a defense in place. So I do think that Caleb works faster here, and maybe we realize that full potential because Jacksonville, you have to remember, was really bad. They were really bad, and then they got Trevor Lawrence. Indianapolis was really bad, and then they got Andrew Luck and traded for Trevor.
Usually how it works, right?
right. This is sort of a reversal of that. And on the flip side, I do wonder if you're New England and there were at least two teams that wanted to come up for Drake May. Now, I get it. You like Drake. You pick him. But that team is not equipped to handle a rookie quarterback right now, at least as far as I see it.
And that's the that's like the conundrum, right? Like, is like if you think there's a guy who's very – if you think there's a guy who can get you into the – that category in the AFC now, which is, it's like growing too. It's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, Lamar, CJ Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, I think probably will get there, in time, whether it's now or later. And, you have the knowledge, you're gonna have to beat three of those teams in succession to just make it to a Super Bowl. If you think that Drake May can get you into that group, you just do it.
Right.
And then you have to figure out the rest later. Now, the challenge to me is if he's not ready to play or you don't have a good enough situation to support him, is having the patience and wherewithal to sit him. And I think that that's what's so interesting about the spot in New England. And you're right. Like, it's probably the worst situation that any of the six first-round quarterbacks are walking into. So, like, does New England have the patience? And I think there could come a circumstance where it's like, this guy's the best quarterback on our team. So maybe the best thing for us to do to win right now is to play Drake May, but that's not what's best for him, so we should sit him. And history has told us almost never will a team have that patience. 48 quarterbacks drafted in the first round from 2008 to 2023. Only two sat their entire rookie years. Those two were Jordan Love and Jake Locker. Patrick Mahomes almost got there because he only started that last game.
Right.
But if you take those three examples, what do those three teams have in common? They were all contending. The Titans were 9-7. The Chiefs made the playoffs. The Packers made the playoffs. They all had established veteran quarterbacks, Matt Hasselbeck, Alex Smith, and Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, like, do you have the patience and wherewithal that legitimately no one over the last generation has had to be a losing team and still not take the wrapper off the first round pick and throw them out there?
Yeah.
It's hard because I think what happens is it's easy for us. And you and I have been through this before, right? Everyone says they're going to redshirt the guy, right? Like everyone says we're going to redshirt our rookie quarterback. And then inevitably what happens is you get to week five or you get to week nine and it's like, well, why the hell aren't you just putting him out there? The team is 2-7. We'll just get him the reps when that might not be the best thing for him. Right. So it's easy for us to sit here on April 25th and say, yeah, sit him. But when November 1st comes and there are 20,000 empty seats in the stadium and, you know, you have a journeyman quarterback out there, do you have the stomach to go forward with the plan, to stick to the plan if it's what's best for the kid? And like in some cases, like prioritize the kid's best interest over what might be best for the team in the moment, or what might be best for the franchise from a business standpoint. That's hard.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's the question. And I think there is a scenario very plausible looking out at it now where the best thing for Drake May is to sit his entire rookie year. And you'd hope the Patriots would have the stomach to follow through with a plan like that.
You have Jacoby Brissett. I mean, you can make it work. It's just dependent on, I mean, how everybody views things there. But there is, you know, I went back and I looked at kind of, I wrote about this last night, you know, went back and kind of looked at a bunch of these teams that have had rookie quarterbacks who have come out and who have succeeded, and then the reverse of that. And I do think that the one missing piece that we don't really talk about is early momentum. And you could say that momentum doesn't exist, but like, if you're comfortable and you develop a sense of rhythm and timing at the NFL, largely because you have good coaches and good players around you, that's going to carry over into subsequent seasons. And if you have to do what Carson Wentz did, or you have to do what, I don't know, who's another famously ruined quarterback who picked up a lot of awful habits? Pick your guy, right? I mean, there's a ton. Then I do think that carries over. And so if you're New England, do you just be like, hey, this is a lost season anyway? I mean, and it is. They're going to be a bad team. They're going to finish in last place in the AFC East. So I mean, do you just say like, hey, let's sit Drake the whole year?
Like, I'm not saying Zach Wilson would have made it, but I think the Jets legitimately ruined him.
Yeah.
You know, like the Jets legitimately, like, he developed the yips. That didn't happen in a vacuum. You know what I mean? Like, that didn't happen for no reason. I think it happened because they forced him out there. And, like, the problem, and it's not just, you can have, like, the best laid plans, but if you're a bad team, you know what's going to happen is you're going to be playing from behind a lot, and you're going to be in third and long a lot. And inevitably, like, the other guys in the team, like, their priority is not going to be your young quarterback's development.
Right.
So, like, you can't, like, if you're down by three touchdowns in week six, it's hard to sit there and, like, run the ball into the line to protect the young quarterback. Like, when, you know, there's, like, there's a receiver over here who's a free agent in 3 months and is like, what the hell are we doing? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's a hard thing. So, like, that's where I think it can get really, really complicated. And I think that the Jets people would tell you, like, the Jets people would tell you, we messed this up.
Yeah.
Like, the kid was not ready to play.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we put him out there on a bad team, and, like, he was playing from behind. He was third and long. He developed bad habits and eventually developed the yips, where that first off season, he was like Chuck Knoblauch trying to make the throw from second base. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that part of it, like, that's what we often overlook. And job security can play into it, and ownership can play into it. Like the owner looking out there and seeing empty seats and seeing a fan base that's checked out on a season. You know, the head coach who needs to make something happen to save his job. Like those things can affect, you know, like the way that these things are handled. Lots of young quarterbacks have been ruined for these reasons. And again, I'm not saying like Mahomes wouldn't have made it otherwise, or Josh Allen wouldn't have made it otherwise, or Lamar Jackson wouldn't have made it otherwise. Joe Burrow, pick your guy. Like by year two, those guys all had pretty outstanding circumstances.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I like thinking about my time covering the league, Andrew Luck is like the only person I can remember at that position who overcame bad circumstances and won.
But along the way, like the got bad ruined. Circumstances did catch up to him. Yeah, for right. sure.
Can you think of anybody? I don't know, like offhand, like I can't think of a young quarterback who overcame bad circumstances. Now, some of it's like the quarterback making the circumstances better, but it's really hard to find somebody who like went into like a bad situation. Like maybe like Matt Ryan in Atlanta way back in 2008.
Like, I mean, the Mannings were allowed to throw like 100 interceptions a year their first 3 years in the NFL and then develop into the players that they were. Now,
right.
I think that Eli and Peyton actually had some pretty decent teams around them as they got going early on in their career, and good coaches. It's hard. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger had a perfectly ideal circumstance,
I mean, Brady walks in and like, you know, like he's on a team that's better than people think. And like if you look at the way they played, the reason they call him a game manager is because the style of play the Patriots were employing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they were as good as he is. They were very much like, hey, we're going to run the ball. We're going to play defense. We're going to have Tom make a half dozen plays a game.
Yeah.
And that became the perfect incubator for him.
Let's take a little stroll here and stop me if before we get to pick number 8, if you have anything else to say.
Yep.
But I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. Okay. Yeah. It was a good day for the top of mock drafts. It's always nice to start out 4 for 4, you know?
4 was chalk. Yep.
Now, I mean, we'll get to my grading rubric a little bit. I had the Vikings taking Drake May, but anyway.
I'd say like the first seven were chalky.
First seven were chalky.
Yeah. I think like we had like most people, like I had the positions right.
Yes.
At 5 and 7. I just had the two players reversed.
Right.
I had the positions right at 6 and 9. I had the two players reversed. So
right.
Most of the top 10 was chalky.
Most of the top 10 was chalky.
With the obvious exception.
Yeah. The Chargers, we talked about Jim Harbaugh, the offensive line. I mean, Jim Harbaugh essentially said it at the coach's breakfast at owners' meetings. He's like, I'm taking it. Like, he's like, we need another offensive tackle.
Did you see his quote?
No.
His quote, hold on. It's so good to have him back in the NFL, and not just because he left that godforsaken school. Hold on 1 second. here it is. It is. I know the question is going to come up about weapons. We look at offensive linemen as weapons.
Nice. That's solid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. I mean, look at the way that Michigan won a national title. It was run game.
And San Francisco and Stanford. Like, he's had, like, everywhere he's gone, and people don't pay close enough attention to this. Like, his offensive lines are all-star teams. That's what he builds. Like, back at Stanford, it was like David DeCastro and that tackle who went to Miami. What was his name?
Oh.
The Richie Incup. But he was Jonathan Martin.
Like, yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like, and then in San Francisco, like how many first-round picks did they have in that line? Mike Iupati and Joe Staley.
Yeah.
And Anthony Davis. And Alex Boone was a really good player. Then
he gets
to Michigan. And Michigan, they could wind up with 7 guys drafted off that offensive line group. Like in one draft. Like it's just... It's what he's built everywhere he's gone. Now, I thought it was going to be Latham just because of some of the stuff that I heard leading up to it. I think they had those two guys close, and my logic was Latham is the better run blocker and Latham's a right tackle, so it upsets the ecosystem a little bit less. Like, now right. You have a question who's going to play who right and who's going to play left, but all is like a middle-of-the-fairway pick. You know what I mean? Like, I'd put it this way. And I think I'm sure you got the same feedback from teams. Teams would be very surprised if he's not at least a very good tackle in the NFL.
Yeah. The only thing I heard from Alt was that the preference was that he land with a really good offensive line coach because he is a little too tall. And there are some things that he does with his pass set that are a little awkward and that you're going to need to fix mechanically, whereas Latham doesn't have that issue. So, but now the ceiling for all is much higher, right? And you assume that they're going to get that going.
I mean, when you start hearing Joe Thomas's name get thrown around, which is like kind of what I got on him, like, and the Joe Thomas comp that came up was like, where they said he was similar to Joe Thomas's. His tape's not spectacular because he's so smooth and you never see him get beat.
Yeah. Now, six was a surprise just because I covered the Giants. I was there when they picked Odell Beckham. And this franchise has an institutional memory. And I understand that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane have their own needs and they know what they want. And Malik Nabers is phenomenal. But when you had a guy like Roma Dunze on the board who everyone's saying, like, you know, this guy's going to be the president when he's done playing, and reminds you a lot of, like, that was their whole thing. You know, OCU Manura, Justin Tuck, Victor, you know, like, this lineage of, like, these, you know, exactly. Like, brand statesmen. You're like, okay, you know, that's why, you know, that's why I had a team actually coming up and taking them ahead of the Giants, because I figured that was such an obvious Giants pick. But instead, they go out and they're like, no, man, we need, you know, and I thought that there was a little bit of hubris from the draft last night, a little bit of magnanimous talk. I mean, what did Booger McFarland the whole time, he thought Malik Nabers should have gone number one. Like, he's like, why isn't the whole draft? He was like, but they said he's a faster Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, okay.
Yeah, I got someone from the Chiefs compare him to Tyreek Hill, which it's like, whoa. Like, so.
All right. You know,
he's a great player. I've also heard he is a pain in the ass. And that's why I didn't put him there. Because I was like, LSU receiver, pain in the ass, a little too close to home. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane also dealt with Stephon Diggs.
Right.
In Buffalo. And so, and like, they just got done with Kadarius Toney. You know what I mean? Like, so I was just, I had it in my head, like, Roma Dunze might not be quite, like, the ceiling might not be quite what it is with Malik Nabers, but, like, if the comp is Davante Adams, which is one I heard on him, and you're getting, like, an A-plus guy, like, clean, like, I heard him from a character standpoint compared to Trent McDuffie, one of his former teammates at the University of Washington. That's really freaking, like, really, really good, you know? Yeah. I thought they'd go receiver. I thought it'd be a Dunze and not Nabers. But, you know, like, you can see where you swing for the fences there, too.
I just get, like, it's not PTSD, but it's like this, you know, when you cover a team as a beat reporter and then you inevitably project, like, 9 weeks ahead of time and you can just see it. It's like week four of the regular season and, like, you know, maybe Daniel Jones isn't ready yet and Tommy DeVito isn't getting the ball to Malik Nabers and you're just like waiting for the Malik Nabers press availability and everyone's like, yeah, no, everything's fine. Like, you know, it's working out. And I'm just like, golly, why don't, you know, I don't know. I thought everyone should have made a move for Drake May, even if the door was cracked open just a little bit, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's get to Michael Penix, by the way. Yeah. All right, hold on. Sports Illustrated draft preview cover, quarterbacks, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Jade Daniels. We got three of the top 12 picks, baby.
There you go.
On the digital covers. Look good. We're all stunned in the moment, but and we're all like, this shouldn't happen, blah, 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 blah. But Atlanta's biggest need was defense. This was not a great defensive class. You can't bail out of that pick. I mean, I think you went with the value, and if you're concerned about Michael Penix's injury history, sitting him for 2 years isn't the worst thing in the world, you know?
I would say, so a couple things on this. First of all, like, I think it's a good example of how people don't realize that the consensus publicly doesn't mean, like, every team thinks this way.
For sure.
I think you're going to hear over the next week or two that there were people in that building, in Atlanta's building, that had Michael Penix as the second quarterback in the draft. I also think you might hear some people in that building who were with the Rams the last couple of years, and there are a few of them, maybe say, there was a little Matthew Stafford in the way he threw the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent a huge contingent. I think it was 8 guys from Atlanta to Seattle the first weekend in April to go and work Penix out. They were going to go work out McCarthy too. That workout wound up getting canceled. But, you know, there were breadcrumbs along the way. Now, I personally thought, like, this was my theory, because you heard it too over the last few days, like, the Falcons really love Penix. And I just sort of had it in my head, just to take people inside this a little bit, as I'm making my phone calls. Like, you know, one thing I had heard was that, like, Arthur Blank wanted a succession plan in place. And almost like he had PTSD from the last 3 years of, like, you know, like, yeah, offloading Matt Ryan a year before they intended to because of the Deshaun Watson thing. And then, like, treading water with Marcus Mariota for a year. And then going all in on Desmond Ridder for a year. After that, like, hey, I want a succession plan in place. So I had it in the back of my head, are they just doing this to appease the owner? You know what I mean? Like, are they doing all of this? Now, I knew they really liked him, and I think that was always genuine. But I was like, God, 8th overall, are they doing this just to appease the owner? And it turns out they weren't. The other issue is the financial issue, which is you got big numbers for Kirk Cousins for the next 2 years. If you cut him after going into year 3, you're going to have a big dead money charge. That basically cancels out the rookie contract advantage that you would have with a young quarterback. So, like, then Penix is playing in year 3. You don't have the advantage then. If he plays really well, you're paying him, so you're never going to have that advantage. All of that said, let's, you know, like the KISS, keep it simple, stupid. If you get 2 good years out of Kirk Cousins, that leads into a decade of Michael Penix, none of this matters.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like,
none of this matters. You know what I mean?
Also, last night, I mean, Kirk Cousins' agent, Mike McCartney, was making the rounds. Like, Daniel Jeremiah had, like, texted him on the air, basically. And, you know, and all Mike
missed all of that because I was on the air. Was there any... things got a little spicy, I guess.
I guess. I mean, listen, Mike's one of the great humans, yeah, you know. And so, you know, all he said was, yes, it was surprising. They called him during the draft and said, hey, we're going to do this. You know, Kirk's not psyched about this, but, you know... But here's the thing, and everyone was like, oh, Kirk Cousins is going to be this, that, and the other thing. First of all, Kirk Cousins is never going to raise a stink about anything. He's not. Right. He's not going to be a problem. This isn't going to be an issue for the team. But also, what no one's talking about is this gives Kirk Cousins another chance in 2 years to come up in free agency at the insanely perfect time and get another $45 million. So, like, this is exactly what's going to happen, right? 2 years from now, 49ers are just going to be so done with Brock Purdy that they can't stand it. They're not going to sign him to a long-term deal. And Kirk Cousins just walks through that door and into a bank vault filled with $45 million in cash. Mark my words.
So this is a great quote from one of the Barstool guys from last night that somebody sent me. Barstool Nate, Kirk Cousins is going to be stunned when he wakes up tomorrow morning and reads about this in the newspaper. So I thought that was pretty good.
That's good.
You know what? I think I think Kirk will be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this is going to lead to a bizarre press conference or appointment viewing on the Pat McAfee show or anything like that. If you catch my drift, I do think the one interesting twist when it comes to all of this, though, when I was doing the reporting on Kirk and the Falcons and how it all went down, one of the interesting details was that the Falcons were very upfront with Kirk in saying, like, even if we re-sign you, there's a good chance we're still going to draft a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
And because they were upfront about that with Kirk, he was kind of like, okay, like, I appreciate you being upfront with me and telling me that this is part of the plan. But it also helped inform him on his decision to leave.
Right.
So now his new team did take a quarterback and he wasn't informed about it.
Yeah.
So I think that that's sort of an interesting twist to the whole thing, you know?
I would guess that Kirk is a big analytics guy. I would assume that once you let the sting go away and once you let the frustration of the whole situation go away, here's the thing that I think that no one really addressed last night. But we have no these next two quarterback classes could be bad.
Yeah.
And they could, you know, they could be mediocre. And I get it. Like, a lot of scouts will tell you, like, we're not looking at rising sophomores and juniors. We're not evaluating those guys right now. And so you might not know, but there aren't those guys. We knew about Caleb Williams and Drake May last April, right? You know, and then Jaden Daniels is kind of a pleasant surprise. You know what I mean? And so I do think
there were a lot of people that were saying, like, Daniels was like the Burrow that kind of came out of left field a little bit. But like, I think, you know, with Caleb and Drake, there was a legitimate like line of thinking those two are better than Bryce or CJ.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Now it turned out the way it turned out. Like, and CJ's had a great rookie year, but there were a lot of people who thought that last year. That's not the case this year.
Yeah.
And if you want names, Carson Beck from Georgia, Shedeur Sanders from Colorado, Quinn Ewers from Texas, there are some names, you know, but those guys will have to have big years to get into that category where we're looking at Caleb and Drake and Jaden now.
The only other thing that stood out to me, and then we'll get to our best and worst in the mock draft champion crowning.
You're teasing the crap out of that. I'm excited for it.
This is great. The only other thing that, so there were a couple situations where if you look at the grades, like you do the trade value charts on what the Vikings did, they had a rough draft. And I'm of the opinion, and I wrote, and plenty of people disagree with me, including editor John Plume's children, who are big Vikings fans. Everything was set up for you to get the guy. Go up and get him. Like, and okay, you make this kind of performative trade one spot ahead to be like, oh yeah, this is who we wanted to get J.J. McCarthy. And listen, Kevin O'Connell's going to make J.J. McCarthy work because it's Kevin O'Connell. That doesn't excuse, in my opinion, the lack of aggression. You had the two first round picks. You have the need. You have the team, the receiver. Go get the guy. Like, if you like Drake May, go get him. Go beat the Patriots door down. Make this a thing. Even if the door was open just a crack, like, go after it. I don't know. And then to trade back up for Dallas Turner, that one specifically, again, I mean, all these trade analytic grades you look at, I mean, but if you look at some of the scores that some of these board out, like, they kind of got taken by the Jaguars. Now, again, if Dallas Turner ends up being great, that's great. But I don't think this team got a whole lot better in the draft. And I said this about the Texans last year. So let's be fair, you know. But, you know, that's my take.
I would say Dallas Turner fell because of medical. I think he's a legitimate top 10 talent. And I think some people would tell you that he's actually more physically gifted than the guy who played opposite him, who was the defensive rookie of the year, Will Anderson. Mm-hmm. So I think that's your swing for the fences. I'm with you. And here's the thing, though. I don't think that third pick was ever truly available.
You don't think it was available?
I don't think, no. And I just don't. Like, and I having talked to the Patriots enough, like, so a couple things on where they were at. It was the off-field stuff as much as the on-field stuff with Drake. Like, they felt like after meeting with him, he was really smart and he was driven by football, and that was important for him. Here's the other thing that I thought was really interesting, and this is a nugget from, like, inside their draft discussions. One of the things that wound up being a big deal to them was everybody knows things went wrong for him at North Carolina, right? Like, last year, new coordinator, they had the eligibility issue with Tez Walker, the offensive line was no good. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Yeah.
In all their meetings with Drake May, he absolutely refused to blame anyone else.
Yeah.
Absolutely refused to blame anyone else for anything. Does that sound like the opposite of something else they just dealt with?
Yeah.
So, like, I think that they really, over time, fell in love with Drake. I think part of it was, look, I think Elliot Wolf still doesn't have that job. And I think a big part of this is you're doing what your owner wants you to do, right? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to gather all of the information. We're going to take this right up to the wire, and we're going to be able to put in front of you, Robert and Jonathan, every option. And we're going to be able to tell you exactly how the league values Drake May. And another question that was asked in that room, which I think is a really good one, is if the two teams that are so interested in Drake May are led by Brian Daboll and Kevin O'Connell, what the hell are we doing even thinking about trading the rights to this guy away?
Also true.
You know, so I don't think he was ever truly available. And I think the Vikings, I would actually give them some credit for having some restraint in not going up and not going crazy for J.J. McCarthy, you know? Because as the last few days played out, I kind of got it in my head. They don't have to move up. There's no one there. Because I was convinced the Giants were a may or nothing team at quarterback, right?
Right.
And so, like, I was like, I started looking at it. It's like, if it's not the Giants, who's going to do it? Like, and to me, the one team they had to be even remotely concerned about was Denver. I the way I looked at the whole thing, I was like, the Vikings' best play is to sit there and wait and take him at 11. And he almost got there, and they got a little antsy at the end. But again, like, this is one of those, like, if they get a quarterback and a pass rusher right, like Houston last year, does it really matter what they paid for it? Now, it sucks next year because I think they only have like 3 picks next year now or something like that. Is that right?
Yeah. And also, like, I don't know. I mean, it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like, and I can feel myself losing the argument. So I get it. Like, I think you're right. It's just, there's like this need to be too slick. Almost, it's like if you're in love with the guy, win every deal, right? Yeah, if you're in love with the guy, go up and get him because. And again, the point is moot because it didn't happen. But what if you had missed out?
Right.
You know what I mean? And you know, I'm sure that no one saw what the Falcons were doing. But like, you know, what if the Falcons had traded? You know, I don't know. You know what I mean? But what if you had missed out? I don't know. I just thought that was like, now, did you understand the board that well that you knew he was going to fall to you? Or did you sit there and kind of just,
I wonder,
what's the difference? You know,
little piece of information, like, I know they knew that the Falcons workout with McCarthy got canceled and didn't get rescheduled. So, you know, if you like JJ next, right, which I believe they did, if you like JJ next after the three guys, the top three guys are gone, and you have information, like the Falcons weren't able to do the work on McCarthy and didn't push to get it done in the end.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't that sort of inform you too?
Yeah.
So again, like, Denver did go to Ann Arbor and work out McCarthy. So Denver, I think you had a legitimate concern there. And Denver's never going to tell you if they actually valued McCarthy over Knicks. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But, I mean, at that point, it's like, okay, like, let's just do what we got to do to make sure we got him now.
Right.
And it's, you know, so.
We'll see.
I don't hate it. Again, it's like one of these, like, you know, that's the whole thing about arguing about the quarterbacks too, Connor. It's like, if Penix is the answer through whatever you want to call it, 2038, like it doesn't matter what they paid for him, right? Like, if J.J. McCarthy is the answer through 2038, like, we won't, like, care about, like, what was the pick that they gave up to get with the Jets? Was it, like, a fourth or something? I can't remember. But whatever it is going to seem like nothing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is he's become, with quarterback at that position in particular, becomes such a yes or no thing, you know? If it's a no, then you look like a moron for moving up for the guy, right? Like, if it's a yes, then, like, no price is too much to go and do it.
I think that's kind of what it is for me, right? It's like, I feel like a lot of what the Vikings are doing is making moves to not look like a moron instead of making moves to drastically better. Like, do you think J.J. McCarthy makes Justin Jefferson better next year?
I'm not convinced J.J. McCarthy is going to beat out Sam Darnold.
Right.
So, I guess that's your answer, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, right?
In other words, like, when they line up in OTAs for the first time next to each other, who's going to be the more talented player?
I mean, Sam Darnold will be better. There's no doubt about that.
No, but who's more talented, though? I'm not even saying better. Might be Sam, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like at least, I mean, Sam was the third pick in the draft.
Right. And had some unbelievable throws. Another quarterback who was ruined by the Jets, but
another tombstone in the Jets quarterback in graveyard.
Yeah, let me throw one more little slight little piece of outrage that I had, like, if you're the Bills at the back end of that draft and Brett Veach calls you, first of all, how is that phone call allowed to be connected to you? Unless he's saying, I really want to give you Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. Like, that should be the one thing that he's allowed to say to you in order to get that phone call connected.
That's great.
And the second thing is, like, Xavier Worthy said in March, yeah, the Chiefs are going to draft me and use me like Tyreek Hill. Everyone knew this was that. I mean, not me. He actually said that? Yeah, there was a, there was a PFT headline from March that was like, yeah, I'm excited, like, the Chiefs will draft me and use me like Tyreek Hill.
Oh, that's great.
Like, you know, you had to know what they were doing. And you're just like,
it's funny too, because it is like the hurdle. Like, can you imagine Bill Polian and like, Bill Belichick doing business with each other like this 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, Bill Polian's number was probably blocked on Belichick's cell phone.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how?
You know what I mean? Like,
if I'm Brett Veach, I'm calling all these numbers and you're getting the Verizon disconnect tone because you're all blocked. And then so you try like Instant Messenger and you try everyone's AOL email and be like, hey, I'm just trying to come up here for a couple picks.
WhatsApp.
Yeah, WhatsApp. You try Signal, everything. Like, how else? How in that room does that feel like a good idea? Yeah, let's give Andy Reid basically, you know, a guy with a similar profile to Tyreek Hill.
Tyreek Light, yeah.
Yeah, during a year where the kickoff return changes and it's going to be super valuable, you know, and they desperately need a wide receiver because we don't know what's going on with Rashee Rice. Let's let them come up here and get it, you know? And I'm not one of those guys that's like, oh, the Bills had to draft a wide receiver. The Bills had to draft a wide receiver.
I actually think like they're one of the teams that really fits Cooper DeJean. Like, I think, you know, like if they walk away with Cooper DeJean after losing what they did at safety and right. like having the need they have at the corner, like I think Cooper DeJean could be perfect for them at 33 and they could walk away really happy, but you still enabled that to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
and to me, it's just the look, right? You and I'm sure have both heard the same thing. And again, if the Bills get a wide receiver in the second round to pacify whoever's going to, you know, kick the door in that they didn't get a wide receiver, I do think that their wide receiver value is pretty consistent in this class beyond the first round. There are good guys left, a lot of good guys left. But like, there was a big drop off after 15 that I think you heard from scouts and personnel people. Like, top 15 right. picks were good. After that, you get a little bit of a mountain. And then after the first round, you get a little bit of a mountain. And then after 100, it really starts to fall off a cliff. So why are you playing in that? Why are you messing around in that playground? You know what I mean? Like, why aren't right. you, why, like, the Bills are, they're a good team. Like, why aren't you moving up? Why aren't you, and maybe they just love somebody that is still there. Or, I don't know.
I mean, like, we still have to let this play out too. It could be like that they think like the strength of the draft, say, is from like 40 to 100, right? Yeah. Like that they think like if we can find a way to get five picks in that range, and now they're sitting at 33, and you know, like, there's power in having the 33rd pick, right? Because if you have the 33rd pick, like, everybody's sitting there all day staring at their board. I didn't expect this guy to be here. I didn't expect that guy to be there. So typically, like, 33, 34, 35, like, those picks are way overvalued in trades. Because there's somebody there inevitably that someone didn't expect to be there.
Right.
That someone might pay too much to go and get.
That's fair.
So the Bills have positioned themselves now where they could really build some capital, like, on Friday night and into early Saturday. And maybe for them it's like, well, we look at like the meat of the draft class and we think if we could come away with four or five really good players between, like, say, 40 and 110, well, like, let's see if we can position ourselves to get a bunch of picks in that range.
Yeah. Still, though, like, you're Brandon.
You're still enabling. You're still enabling a really, really fast guy to go to Patrick Mahomes' team.
I saw someone tweet like, "Oh, the analytics on Xavier Worthy were horrible. Don't interrupt your enemy while he's making a mistake." I don't know, man. Have you seen that guy play football? Like,
I don't. Does 4-2-1? Is 4-2-1 an analytic?
Like, my God. Like, I'm just thinking about like. Like, do you think that when, Brandon?
I mean, wouldn't the all time combine 40 yard dash list be an analytic?
I mean, no, because we're not Al Davis. But any, you know, but
I like. But what I've heard about the guy too. Now he's smaller than Tyreek. Like the Tyreek comparison is not totally fair because if Tyreek's built like a running back, right? So this guy is not as big. But like one thing I have heard, the two things I have heard that make me think he's going to make it is like one thing like that people tell you about him is generally guys that fast aren't good route runners. He's a really good route runner, right?
Yeah.
And then number two, he's super tough. So having those two things along with the speed, I think gives you a chance, which is what the Chiefs saw in him. And the Chiefs didn't think he was going to be sitting there. Like they had sort of been, I think, convinced that they were going to lose the player. You know, like that, like Indianapolis or someone higher up was going to, Miami, somebody higher up was going to like just take the swing on him earlier than anyone expected. So they were surprised when he was there in the late 20s.
Do you think like Brandon Bean, do you think like when his phone rings, like do you think he has like Brett Veach's picture come up? Like, you know how some of your closest friends, like their picture comes up when they call you?
Well, now but you don't even like, now it's like, doesn't that happen automatically a lot now, right? Like where you didn't put the picture in there, it just shows up.
The only two people that it happens.
It's kind of jarring because it's like the whole screen when they come, when it calls, you know what I mean? Like it's.
But it's weird for me because it only happens for two people, my wife and Michael Fabiano.
Yeah, the guy, Fabiano, yeah. Isn't he in his, like, backyard or something, I think?
I don't know, yeah. I love hearing from Michael Fabiano, but...
But I think that's right. I think he's standing in his backyard in that picture.
do you think that, like, he sees, like a picture of Brett Veach, like, holding up a, like, a Lombardi, like, Brett Veach's picture, like, holding up a Lombardi and being like, yeah, this is a guy I want to deal with in the next round?
Or maybe he just hasn't updated the picture and it's, like, of Brett Veach and Alex Smith.
I bet Brett Veach has got a few Lombardi picks in there. All right, before we get to crowning the mock draft champion, let me just give me a very quick best and worst. And it, again, it's hard. Worst, yeah, is relative to me because at worst at this point is value and timing and all that kind of stuff. Give me best and worst.
Okay, so because I didn't think about this ahead of time because I'm unprepared the night after the draft, I would say best. God, I feel like, you know, I hate this because I feel like we do this every year with Howie, but to get Quinyon Mitchell,
yeah,
in the 20s without having to move up, and I think I'll combine this with the Lions going up for Terrion Arnold. I think that's two contenders that have very real need where the value met the need. You know, like where, yeah, like it wasn't just something, like it wasn't just filling a hole in your roster. It was actually the best player too, you know? So like, I really like the moves there to go and get corners for two contenders. So I love Quinyon Mitchell at 22 to the Eagles. I love Terrion Arnold at 24 to the Lions. Worst, I just like look at Bo Nix and I just too early. You know what I mean? Like, and I hate saying this cause it's like Sean Payton could make me look like a complete moron, but couldn't you have done something to move down and get in better position to take him? I don't think the Raiders were taking him at 13. I think maybe you could have replaced your second round pick. The Rams had kind of sniffed around at moving up. I think that would have been a perfect spot for the Rams to move into, for the Broncos to drop back to 19, maybe pick up an extra pick, and I feel better about Bo Nix. But that would be the one for me where I'm like, I just, you should have gamed that out a little bit better. And if you knew you were taking Nix, you should have had the scenario in place. And maybe nobody wants to go down, but I just think with Bowers there and with Fuaga there, like, it just, like, it feels to me like Fuaga was the last of, like, the top-tier tackles. Like, you know, I think Alt and Latham up here, and then, like, Olu and Fuaga right there. And then I think there's, like, a little drop-off. So, and then Bowers is obviously unique. Like, I think that those two guys should have been able to put you in position to move down a little bit and take Nix at a better spot.
I like that. My worst was the Cowboys because, I mean, I don't have a problem with Guyton. I think he's going to take some work and he could be end up being the best tackle in this class. Right. But I do think it's going to take some time. So my problem with Dallas is how they're acting like a team that has already won a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh yeah, you know, we can trade back. We don't need, you know, go up and get the guy. Go up and get the best tackle in this draft. They're behaving like, you know, I don't know. They're behaving like the Patriots. And it's like, but they haven't won anything. They haven't done anything.
I love it because, like, every time you bring that up, too, on Dallas, I just think of Jerry sitting at the press conference explaining it.
Like, in what way? Like,
well, like, talking about, like, circumcising the mosquito.
If
you circumcise the mosquito, then yes, maybe you find some flaws. But I wanted to get me a left tackle. And I want to keep me my all-pro guard, Tyler Smith, right where he was. And so we felt like there was a lot of upside with this particular player. And after offloading a all-pro left tackle, we felt like it was time to swing for the fences. And he would have something way more creative than swing for the fences. There'd be some hokey Arkansas analogy to swinging for the fences, whatever it is.
We're going to hog tie this pig, or we're going to.
I went looking for, now you know what he did? He went looking for some glory hole at left tackle.
I'm all in on the, I love that they're having to actively defend them being all in. I love it. I love
the press conferences where it's Jerry, Steven, and Mike McCarthy, and Mike's just sitting there silent the whole time.
It's just like, what am I even doing here? What am I even doing here?
Oh, God bless them. The checks are still clearing.
I know. I mean, that's really all that matters. My best pick, I talked about it on the draft preview pod. I was a big Jordan Morgan guy. I think he fits so perfectly into this Packers offense, and the core Shanahanian guys, offensive line guys, really liked Jordan Morgan. I think this pick really checked out. I think he can be a special player for them.
And I think it's good to aggressively take care of like a need at a premium position. And like, look, like they've been, I feel like they've been sort of like, you know, that old saying, hope is not a plan.
Right.
They've been like hoping on David Bakhtiari to stay healthy the last few years. And obviously, like, now they finally cut the cord there. You know, I think being aggressive to take care of an important position is big.
Yeah. So,
how about Ricky Pearsall at 31, by the way? Maybe that leads to something today. We'll see.
I know. You know who could, I don't know. It's 10. We're going to wrap this pod up at like 10:30. At like 4:03. Like Deebo Samuel to the Jets or something. You know what I mean?
I think it's like, you know what though? What's so interesting about this is like Kyle Shanahan is like a ninja as far as like drafting and developing receivers.
That's the thing.
So the minute we get off of this, I'm going to go watch Ricky Pearsall highlights.
Yeah. I mean,
because I want to go see like if I can like, oh, yeah, like, he really is that good. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see if that pops out now that I know who took him.
Yeah. And, you know, for those who don't know, like, you know, a lot of teams will split up, you know, how they, you know, like scouts and GM and everything, everybody will do their job. But the coaching staff will divvy up guys based on their, most coaching staffs will divvy up guys based on their areas of expertise. And, you know, Kyle's looking at the wide receivers, you know, and he's done pretty darn good job of that so far. So
yeah, I mean, he played that position. I can still remember actually playing with him on NCAA 2003, using him as part of a Texas receiver group. I think he was the slot with Roy Williams and God, what was the name of the other guy?
Limus Swede?
No. It was Roy Williams. They had another guy who was, hold on, let me pull it up, because it would have been like 2002 Texas. With like Major Applewhite as a quarterback. Hold on.
Baller. They don't have the roster on Wikipedia. What the hell?
2002 football roster. Here we go. All right. Roy Williams was the number one. He was like kind of like the alpha on that team. And then where is it? Who was it? God, this is going to kill me now.
I'm telling you, dude.
Because there's Kyle Shanahan. Hold on. B.J. Johnson. It was B.J. Johnson was the other one. So it was B.J. Johnson and Roy Williams with, I think, Kyle Shanahan playing like the slot.
Wow.
They listed him at 6'3", too, which I think is maybe embellishing a little.
Kyle Shanahan, not a bad quarterback either. Practice squad QB. I heard he can sling it. Good for him. Hopefully that'll provide a little bit of electricity.
But he was in the NCAA game for those who might be too young to even play that game.
Still can get it on eBay.
We're very, very, very excited for it to come back. Like my long con is almost complete. Bought my kids a PlayStation last year.
Nice.
Have started to bond with them over playing the video game, so it will not seem weird to my wife or anybody else when I disappear into the basement to play video games in late July when a certain game comes back.
Yeah. Now, let's get to what we're all waiting for, man. How do you feel? How do you feel going into this?
I felt pretty good.
Yeah.
Like I felt pretty good. Like I think I had a good night. I had the two things flip-flopped. I had Alton Latham flip-flopped. I had Neighbors and Adunze flip-flopped. So, if I had had those two, like, right, I would have had an outstanding night. But it was still pretty good.
So let me just introduce to you how I grade
your,
this.
Okay. Your scoring system.
The OR score. The scoring system.
The OR score. I like the OR score. The OR That's score. Actually pretty good.
So you get 5 points for the clean sweep, right? Player, slot, team. You get 4 points for player to team.
Yep.
And I've tweaked this over time, but I think the only other thing that I am going to give people points for anymore is I did 2.5 points for team position.
Okay.
I made a few exceptions. For example, it was you, me, and Matt Vidaram. Matt had Olufashanu at 10 to the Jets instead of 11. I gave him full credit for that. That's a full credit pick. Okay. You know,
I think I did too, right?
Yes. So okay. Both of you guys got full credit for that pick because, you know,
it really was.
It really was. Yeah.
So did we do anything? Are we doing total first rounders then? Like how many of the 32 you had in the first round?
No, because that one was all over the board and I only had about 15 minutes to do this.
Okay.
So I decided to stick with, okay. I thought about like,
I think I had 29, which like was really good for me. But like, I would say to be fair, is the result of a pretty chalky first round.
Yeah. This was definitely the best one that I've ever had. But again, when you're buoyed by the first five of the first six picks going kind of how you thought, it is what it is. So in third place with a score of 50.5, we have our friend Matt. Matt had some good ones. I think the best one, let me just find, because I'm going to try to say something nice about everybody's mock draft. Matt, let me go all the way to... So he had the New Orleans Saints trading back. The Bengals coming up for Brock Bowers, the Saints falling to 18 and still getting Fuaga. Both of you guys nailed that pick, which good job on both of you guys. So he was good. He was strong too through the back end of the draft with team position matches. So Matt and I was generous across the board too. I counted offensive line as one position. Okay.
Yeah.
So okay. Some of us had the Cowboys going interior offensive line. They pick tackles, whatever.
Yep.
You still got your 2.5 points. So third place, congratulations to Matt. Drum roll. In second place was me. So Albert is our champion again this year.
All right.
So I was happy because, so we finished 5 points apart. So you had one more direct hit. And what I think tipped the scales in your favor was either Fuaga to the Saints, or you had, I believe, the
I had some at the end of the round, which I that's what I'm that those are the ones I'm always most proud of.
100%.
But I had more
Yes. I'm trying to look up so you had at the very end
okay. I think I had 9 teams to players correct.
So you had the Chiefs taking Xavier Worthy. Okay. And so
And I had the Cowboys taking Guyton also, I believe.
And you had the Cowboys taking Guyton, which was really the that was the separator. That's what did it for you. So congratulations to Albert, our mock draft champion.
Thanks.
You know what though? I will say this. I had the Broncos trading up to pick 10 to take Bo Nix symbolically to erase the sting of losing Patrick Mahomes, which I like.
I like that. I like that though. Yeah. Because it would have been 11, so he hops over 11, right? To go, yeah.
So I didn't get full. So because I was a hot dog, I didn't get full credit for that.
So this is like that. It's like the 15-yard penalty for celebration
for spiking the football. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I did have neighbors to the Giants, but it was begrudgingly. I thought I really didn't think that they were going to make that pick. And then yeah. I got a lot of cheap garbage time points.
I will. One thing I will take away from this year is I overthought.
I mean, we do that every year.
The receivers.
Yeah.
I overthought it. I overthought the tackles. I overthought the receivers at the top. If I flip those two, then I've got 13 direct hits, which is really good. You know, so
wow.
That one like will haunt me a little bit.
That's a Dr. Z kind of mock draft, 13 direct hits.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't there. I mean, but you know, like you have the positions, right? And you know, I was on Fuaga pretty early and consistently with the Saints throughout. And I liked the Jets one too, because there were so many people that were saying Bowers. And I felt like I stood strong on that one also.
I was never on the Jets to Bowers because they want tight ends who are going to knock the crap out of people. And that's not Brock right now. It could be
right.
In the future. But I...
Well, so here's the problem with Brock. And this is why the Raiders are perfect for him. You need an inline tight end. You need a really good inline tight end to play with him because you're not going to line him up that way. So, like, basically what you're saying, if you draft him, he's a really good player. But you're basically saying, like, we are going to be playing most of the time with only two receivers in the field, which means Brock Bowers is a better player, a better threat than putting three receivers on the field.
Right.
And that means you have to have a good player as your inline tight end. And the Raiders have that. Like, Michael Mayer is going to be a really good player.
Sure.
Like, and Michael Mayer is a traditional tight end. So I think Brock Bowers in a lot of different ways went to the ideal spot.
Yeah. I mean, it fits for them. I had thought that the Jets were going to trade up for a wide receiver because I think Woody Johnson is so enamored with everything he's
I thought
got going
Woody
on.
Was like that was the one thing that scared me when I gave him a loop was Woody's going to step in and say no offensive lineman like he did a couple years ago, but didn't happen.
Yeah. Now is he going to go ham tonight and trade for a couple wide receivers? I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe he's got to make up for it. Not enough headlines off the Olu pick.
He's still out there, Woody Johnson. All right. Well, thanks guys. This was fun. I'm going to get some coffee.
Hey, you know, one thing I do want to say, you know, like to you, Connor, to Matt, you know, Gilberto and obviously John Plume. We covered this draft under some really weird circumstances, and I don't think we need to get into all of it. But
whatever,
people
do you
don't
mean?
Realize this. People don't realize this. Like our last day of work was supposed to be today.
Yeah.
And like, so I remember when all of that was happening 3 months ago, how I was like, oh my God, is that not, how weird is that? Like if things don't work out here, we could be covering the draft on Thursday night and be gone on Friday.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to say I'm really proud of the group that we got, like, and that like we covered the draft the way that we did. And I'm not saying that to pound my own chest, but out of appreciation for like, you know, what we have collectively and the group that we have. Cause I think, you know, We did a really good job covering the draft this year, and I don't think you would have known the difference if you didn't know that there was something going on. And Connor, it like cost you a cover. You know what I mean? Like, and you did a really good job with that story. You spend time every year on that. And like, you know, like there's just like little things that I think our group had to deal with. And I think honestly, if you look at like our coverage of what I think is probably the second biggest event for NFL fans of the year outside of the Super Bowl, I don't think you would have been able to tell that there was anything happening at our place. And so thank you to you. Thank you to Matt. Thank you to Gilberto. Thank you to John. Like, cause I do think like, you know, our group, we did a good job over the last 3 months.
Yeah. And I'll say this, like, I hope for people listening, like it just, you know, there are days when we're silly. There are days when we're wrong. There are days when we're, you know, when we're on it. Just like everybody else, just like you at your job. But I feel like the one thing, you know, I was talking to our old boss, Peter King, about this the other day. And he called to ask me who was on my mock draft, what my mock draft looked like.
But, I got that call too.
you know, I just said,
Peter, we know you miss it.
I know.
We know deep down you miss it. I know. You might say you hate it, but we know you miss it.
Come on back. but I, you know, I just said to him, it's just like, you know, having seen, you know, this prospective end of my time in football writing, you know, like having to confront that, you know, it really does make all these other experiences, because it's a fun job and it's a job that I love. And so I hope that anyone who listens to the podcast, whether we're right, we're wrong, we're goofy, you disagree or agree with us, you know, I hope that this year at least showed that like we love it, because no matter what, I mean, we you know, I just, it was so funny. Like, you know, sometimes you're walking around and you're like, should I be applying to law school? And then, you're like, and they're like, hold on, this coach is calling and let me see how he's, what he thinks of Michael Penix, you know? And it's like, you know, but when you love it, you know, it is, you love it. And so I hope that people listening can tell, you know?
Yeah. And I think that that's like a really good point, really good point to make here, Connor, because, you know, like we get skeptical in these jobs and we detach and we don't root for teams the same way as when we were kids. And, you know, and I know like for a lot of people, like it's one of the reasons why I keep rooting for Ohio State the way that I do is I think it keeps me connected with my audience, is that like I can think the way the audience is thinking because I'm as into it as you are into your NFL teams, you know? And so like I think it's a really good point you made there about like the passion that we have for the job. And I hope that that comes through in everything that we do, whether it's written, whether it's here. And I hope that it came through over the last 3 months, because that's something that really carries you through a time like that, where we love it as much as you do. Like you're listening to this on the way to work, on your run, wherever it is, you're listening to it in your free time because you love it. And I hope it comes through that we love the sport and care about the sport as much as you do.
If you're listening to this on your run and you have a good fix for patellar tendonitis, let me know. I've been sidelined. Anyway, enjoy round two, guys. We'll be back on Tuesday to recap Monday. Sorry. To recap, just like we always do. Keep it locked. We already have a rest of the draft, mock draft up. We got winners and losers from last night. Albert's got tons of great stuff. So, I don't know. Spend some time at SI.com. And thank you.
Thanks, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.